morning blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago. Time for Abandoned Manitoba. But before we get to today's clue, there have been a couple of deaths of notable Manitobans recently. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia. Yes, listeners may remember that back in June, we talked about music and the song Red River that might have had a connection to here in Manitoba. Well, at the end of that episode, we introduced our listeners to Ted Longbottom, a local musician, has been active most of his life making music, released a couple of albums around the 1990s, early 2000s. Well, last week he passed away at the age of 62, which to me is not old at all. You know, that's terrible because he was such a talented musician to have lost that voice at so young age.
We actually got a listener, an email from a listener just yesterday telling us about that. And the listener did talk about what a great storyteller he was and a great singer. And so, you know, you brought his work to our attention through Abandoned Manitoba. Yeah. So listeners will remember that. Thank you. And there was another death as well.
There was. In fact, 2 days after Ted Longbottom, I saw an obituary for Mary Roberts. And that name probably doesn't resonate with our listeners because that's her married name. Her maiden name was Mary Maxim Chuck, and that might not ring a bell either, because when she was working for a fellow in Sifton, Manitoba, he asked her if he could use her name as his product. He was a manufacturer of woolen products, and he thought, well, this is the age, this was back in the, I guess, the 1940s, 1950s, this was the age of Betty Crocker, you know, and there was this matronly figure representing the brand. He thought, this is a good idea for my woolen products. My housekeeper has the name Mary Maxim Chuck. I think I could shorten that, make it into a little more anglicized and call it Mary Maxim. And that might resonate with listeners because those sweaters that he made, which were iconic through the 50s, 60s, 70s, well, in fact, even today, they are still available out there. The family still owns the business making these sweaters. And you may remember them as heavy wool sweaters with wildlife themes, you know, maybe some grouse or maybe a moose. But everybody wore them, and especially if you were into curling, everybody wore a Mary Maxim sweater. And, well, she passed away last week.
Well, thank you for bringing our attention to those lives of notable Manitobans. Mm-hmm. So important as part of our discussion here on Abandoned Manitoba. So bring us to what we're discussing this week.
Right. Well, last week I said that Manitoba has a wealth of museums. In fact, I did a count. There's over 220 of them around the province. And I believe that every single one of them deserves a visit. A museum at Elkhorn, of course, in western Manitoba, really stands out for me. And it has, I think, an interesting backstory that involves abandonment. Its existence is owed to two cousins who we're going to meet this morning. The first of them is Isaac Clarkson, known familiarly as Ike.
So tell us about him.
Well, he was born on his parents' farm a few miles east of Elkhorn in 1913, the youngest of four children. Like a lot of little boys, even today, he was fascinated by machines, and especially automobiles, which, of course, keep in mind, this is a very rare thing at that time. And according to local lore, whenever someone drove by his farm in an automobile, he'd run to get a closer look. He was just fascinated by these four-wheeled marvels. Jump forward to 1946, he found an abandoned automobile, a 1909 Hupmobile that had once been owned by his neighbor that had driven by his farm. And it was possibly, say, one of the ones that he had seen in his childhood, and so he brought it home. Over a period of years, Ike repaired or replaced the damaged and missing parts of the car, and in some cases he had to manufacture new parts when he couldn't find an old original. He repainted the body in its original dark green color, and he reupholstered the seats. Now, I know this sounds very cosmetic in restoration, but he also repaired the engine too, so essentially he made this old pile of scrap metal into a nearly new drivable car again. It was really quite remarkable, and this was the beginning of an obsession, because Ike realized that most of the old cars from his youth would end up on a scrap metal heap unless he did something about it. So he began traveling in a 300-kilometer radius around his home at Elkhorn. He would buy whole vehicles or he'd buy parts whenever he found them. He accepted donations whenever they were offered to them, and he restored a whole bunch of other vehicles in the same way as that 1909 Hupmobile.
So when did his vehicles become a museum?
Well, one of his cousins, schoolteacher Marguerite Ablett, had inherited her family farm near Elkhorn, and Ike helped her to operate it in return for a share of the crop and a place to store his growing car collection. You know, she had buildings on the farm, I guess, and he would store his cars in the buildings. So that by the late 1950s, his collection had grown to about 50 vehicles, consisting of some of the rarest automobiles in the world. Ike conceived the idea of opening a museum. In fact, it would have been the first of its kind in Manitoba at Elkhorn. So in 1961, a non-profit organization called the Manitoba Automobile Museum Foundation was established. But it took another 6 years for it to really begin to open. So in 1967, which of course was Canada's centennial year, Ike's museum opened to considerable public praise. Unfortunately, Ike didn't live long to enjoy the accolades.
What happened to him?
Well, in 1971, Ike died at a hospital in Regina, and he was buried in the Elkhorn Cemetery. He was only 58 years old. You know, this always troubles me when somebody younger than me passes away. And his estate left his car collection to his cousin, Marguerite Ablett, and she donated it to the museum, in so doing, becoming one of that museum's second founders. So again, two cousins, both of them contributed to creating that museum. Marguerite lived to a ripe old age of 95. In fact, she passed away in 1999, so she had a nice long time to enjoy her role in preserving this absolutely unique collection. And I'm told that a condition of her donation was that the collection had to stay in Elkhorn. You know, and I have to say, it was a very generous gesture on her part, but in some ways it did limit the museum's impact because, well, to be honest, the site is quite a ways from major population centers. It's 300 kilometers from Winnipeg, 100 kilometers from Brandon, 250 kilometers from Regina. And the reality is that the farther that a potential museum is from visitors, the fewer that are going to make the trip. Then on the plus side, the museum does face onto the Trans-Canada Highway. And of course, that's one of Canada's busiest highways. And this is one of the largest collections of very old cars in all of North America. So it's definitely worth the drive. And I would urge anyone traveling across the prairies, please drop in at Elkhorn. You know, plan on spending at least an hour or two.
What sort of cars does the museum contain?
Well, today the collection numbers around 100 vehicles. In other words, they continue to acquire vehicles after Ike's passing. And many of them are from the early period of automobiling around the First World War. When you say the phrase classic car, people often think of cars from the 50s and 60s. Well, these are really classic cars. The oldest one, for example, is a 1908 Rio, and it features a two-cylinder engine with a chain drive that turns the wheels. I mean, primitive by today's standards, but, you know, revolutionary at the time. They have the original 1909 Hupmobile that instigated Clarkson's original collecting bug. Most of our listeners have probably never heard of those two automobile brands, a Rio and a Hupmobile. And if so, well, you're probably never going to have heard of all the other brands they have. Things like Metz, EMF, Case, Russell, Briscoe, Overland, McLaughlin, Saxon. These are cars that are long gone, and they're all sitting there in Elkhorn.
Now, you said that this was the first antique auto museum in Manitoba. Are there others?
Well, a lot of museums have some vehicles as part of their collections, but to my knowledge, there are four that focus primarily on vehicles. And in my view, that makes them all special. Another real gem is Heeman's Antique Autorama at Carman. It was established in 1966, around the same time as Ike's Museum at Elkhorn, by a guy named Bill Heeman. And one of the remarkable details of this story is that Bill Heeman was a first cousin of Ike Clarkson. So it looks to me like the family had a long-running love of cars, you know, all of them, and they all tried to collect whenever possible. Bill Heeman opened his collection of early automobiles for visits until 1985, and today Bill's son George opens the Autorama on special request. So, for example, in 2015, I had the good fortune to see the Heeman collection, and it was astounding.
What are the other two auto museums?
Well, there's the Second Chance Auto Museum in Treherne, and it's the most recent one. It opened in 2019, and I had a visit there a couple of years ago. Wonderful museum. And there is here in Winnipeg, well, actually not quite, it's in Headingley, Jim's Vintage Garages, based on the collections of the late Jim Pern. It's not just vehicles, but a whole array of automotive paraphernalia. You know, the museum includes replicas of vintage service stations for such forgotten brands as White Rose, Red Indian, North Star, Prairie City Oil, and BA. It has enamel signs, it has gas bowsers, oil and fuel cans, hubcaps, license plates, service station uniforms, and a whole lot more.
Are these museums open at this time of year?
Well, that's the unfortunate thing, and I probably should have talked about this earlier in the summer so people could go visit. No, most small museums can't justify opening at any time other than the summer months, but most of them do open on request, so it's always worth contacting them at any time of year, and who knows, maybe you could get in to see them at, you know, other times. It's definitely worth a try.
Now, earlier you said that the focus of these four museums is what makes them special. What did you mean?
Well, again, I said there's over 200 museums around Manitoba, and most of them are what I would call community museums, in that they represent the history of the place where they're located. But a smaller number of museums are thematic. In other words, they focus on a particular subject. And so, for example, we have the Printing Museum at Crystal City that has a wonderful, unique collection of working printing presses, most of them over 100 years old and still in good working order. That's really all they do is printing. At Stroll Lake, there's a museum that focuses on the Northwest Mounted Police, and that's its focus. An interesting hybrid format is the museum at Plum Coulee. While it is a community museum, it's also located in a former grain elevator, and to make room for the display of artifacts, they cut openings into the wooden bins that used to hold grain. So as you walk through the exhibits, you also get a first-hand look at how a grain elevator worked. So I always encourage museum operators to present collections that can be found nowhere else. And of course, that means it'll give people a compelling reason to visit the museum. You know, so if listeners want ideas on museums to visit now or in the future, I would encourage them again to use the MHS Insight app on their smartphones or visit the MHS website, where we have a full list of over 200 wonderful museums.
Thank you for this, Gordon. What's up for next week?
Well, when I travel around Manitoba, I'm always drawn to places that offer scenic views of the surrounding landscape. And one of my personal favorites is Star Mound in south central Manitoba. Panoramic views of Winnipeg, on the other hand, are surprisingly scarce. Abandonment plays a role in that, as there were at least two places in the past that offered stunning vistas of the city. Both are now gone, and I will reveal them next week.
Looking forward to that. Thank you, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.